Hello and welcome to The Good Council, the podcast of the World Future Council. In each episode, we'll highlight current challenges and policy solutions, and we'll also take you on a journey of inspiring stories, listening to another of our intergenerational dialogues from around the globe.
Hi, my name is Marie Biermann. I'm a member of the Management Board of the World Future Council. Welcome to Season 3 of our podcast, Putting Future Generations in Focus. Our work at the World Future Council revolves around the rights of future generations and ensuring that their interests and needs are accounted for in policies and actions taken today. We must ensure that our current behavior does not cause enormous harm to future generations. That's why our podcast will cover topics that create greater awareness of why it is so important to care about the rights of future generations. Today, in this first episode of Season 3, I'm speaking with two experts on future justice. Let me introduce to you Nishan Gunasekera, Councillor of the World Future Council, and Gurni Bhattacharya, a representative of our Youth Forum, Youth Present. It's great to have a chance to talk with you today. Nishan, tell us a bit about yourself and why this issue is top of agenda for you.
Thank you very much, Marie. And it's a great pleasure to connect alongside Gurni. And I must thank the World Future Council and Anna and the team for the invitation to speak in this important Good Council dialogues. The topic of future generations have been very close to my both personal and professional journey over the last few years. I've had the honor of being present when the World Future Council was born in 2007, along with the founding councillors. And the rights of future generations, future justice, and all the other topics that we are about to discuss today have been very much part of that journey. So, as a lawyer and as an educator, involving on this kind of topic within international law and kind of cross-cultural education, the future generations topic has been central to my work. So it's a pleasure to be here, Marie, and look forward to our discussion.
Thank you so much, Nishan. I'm glad you are with us today, and I'm looking forward to diving deeper into the topic of future generations. Well, speaking of which, I'm delighted to have one of our youth present representatives here. Gurni, may I ask you to introduce yourself?
Yes, sure. Thank you so much to World Future Council for organizing this brilliant session with Nishan Gunasekera. And also, this is a brilliant topic to discuss in today's time where we are experiencing a lot of conflicting situations and a lot of social inequalities currently going on across the global asymmetries and specialties. I can really experience that how youth voices matter in today's times, because youth are someone who can speak for the future and for the past, because we are learning from the past, from the histories, and youth has an experience because they are going through the current contemporary trends, which probably previous generations haven't experienced before. Thank you for also inviting me, and it's a pleasure of mine to speak because I'm a youth present representative of the council, being from India and also studying in Germany currently in my double master's in sociology from Bielefeld University and University of Bologna. Thank you.
Thank you, Gurni. Let's talk a bit more about the role of future generations. Nishan, you have been working for a very long time on environmental protection and intergenerational holistic learning, including the rights of current and future generations. Can you please explain to our listeners why this matters? And when we talk about future generations, would you also include the young people of the present in this, in these future generations?
Thank you, Marie. And it's a great pleasure to speak immediately from the point where Gurni left off. So I'll answer the last question first. It's an easy answer. Yes, youth and children are very much a part of future generations. And as Gurni correctly said, they are facing some of the challenges that the previous generations may not have had to undertake as challenges in their lifetime. And they will be around to usher in the newer generations who are yet unborn. So youth and young people and children are very much part of future generations. Now, coming to your first question on rights of future generations, I will approach to explain this in two brief points. First, that rights, whether it be human rights, such as the recently recognized right to a healthy environment, or right towards a safe climate, or rights of nature, rights of rivers and waterfalls and all the other sentient beings on our planet home Earth, have no temporal limitations. Or in other words, there is no time limitations on how it is applied and linked. This means that there is a causal link between rights of current generation and the rights of future generations, including those who are yet to be born. Now, it's also interesting that it's 75 years since the adoption of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, 30th anniversary of the Vienna Plan of Action for the Implementation of Human Rights. And between these 75 years, we've had many, many movements within human rights, as well as environmental rights and social movements, including youth and young people who really brought the agenda of realizing rights of current and future generations together. An evolution of international environmental law, which is crucial to the work of the World Future Council, looking at areas such as intergenerational equity, Earth trusteeship, as you mentioned, Marie, principles that are giving rise to Earth jurisprudence and ecological law, which basically means the second element, as I mentioned, of my explanation, is that each right has corresponding duties. Without these duties, without recognizing them, the rights will not be holistic. So that's where rights of future generations are strengthened by principles such as intergenerational equity, Earth trusteeship, and goes to the hearts of the discourse of sustainable development law.
At first, thank you, Naishan, for highlighting this. I think the rights of future generation is very important and timely matter to discuss in this situation, as Naishan has rightly agreed. Like, we have implemented a lot of laws, a lot of legal frameworks, probably, and even not all legal frameworks are not exactly implemented to some extent, but we need to think about it and raise more awareness. And youth as persons, as subjects, we need to think youth as subjects. They have their own perceptions and they need to get more awareness about what are the rights they have before implementing any rights in the legal frameworks. It's very important to understand about the access of rights and access of resources and what are the rights actually available to them in the form of information. So bridging the digital divide can also foster this sort of gaps and in the understanding of human rights or environmental rights, for example, because access to information is the fundamental thing and it's very important.
Thank you. I think it's very important that we all have a common understanding of what we mean by future generations before we go further into the concepts that are closely related to it. It was the idea of our founder, Jakob von Uexkø, to create an organization speaking up for the rights and needs of future generations. Therefore, we see future justice and intergenerational justice as concepts to guide all political, economic, and cultural actions. Naishan, what is future justice?
Thank you, Marie. Absolutely. I think, as Goni also said, realizing future justice is a paramount importance of our time. In simple terms, future justice is that one being conscious of the decisions he or she may take today, having an important impact on the now, but also in the long-term future of on the planet. All decision makers need to be informed, not only the legal or the policy frameworks for future justice, but also that they can and should be held accountable for those decisions that they take today. The other side of the coin of future justice is what I mentioned about accountability. And one clear example of this is the work on ecocide, we are looking at extending the wonderful pioneering work of the World Future Council through its Future Justice Commission, looking at crimes against future generations. What is a crime against future generations? Which is the other side of the future justice component, is that knowingly, intentionally doing things today that I know will harm future generations, and being held accountable on those terms. And ecocide is one movement that has gained a lot of momentum, which is built on the founding work and the principles and the spirit of the World Future Council. I think we should be very careful on how we move around the way we use the resources on our planet, and be conscious that whatever, not in the short term, not the next 10, 15 years, whatever we do, having the long-term consequences has to necessarily inform our decision-making today before it is too late.
Nishan, you already mentioned crimes against future generations, and many representatives of our youth forum, Youth Present, have already taken a stand against crimes against future generations. Please explain to our audience, what does future just lawmaking have to look like to prevent these crimes?
Sure, Marie. I think we should begin with the principles of sustainable development, which is guiding the multilateral, the regional, and the national development program at the moment. And we are falling short. If you look at the last message of the Secretary General of the United Nations, we are not even halfway or quarter of the way on achieving the sustainable development goals. Now, we are, of course, at the same time facing the challenge of not realizing this in the 2030 agenda, which is supposed to have brought the conversation on planetary boundaries within the decision-making processes today. Now, if we are curbing the rights of future generations, who are going to be born after us, who's going to be our children's children's children to lead a fulfilling life on our planet, then we are committing a crime against future generations, and we should be held accountable. Not just decision makers at the policy level, which are obviously first and foremost accountable, but all our systems of governance needs to necessarily evolve to make sure that in the first instance, there is a consciousness shift or a paradigm shift for governance, ensuring there is future justice. But finally, it is high time that we realize that we cannot any longer work in silos. Even the climate issue, as important and significant as it is, cannot be discussed in a silo. We must understand it from an Earth's systems governance approach, that each decision that we take today has a necessary impact on a wider systems that is there, whether it's the biosphere or the stratosphere. We should not get siloed into this. And that's where I think it's important not only to realize our duties, but also to ensure that we do not commit crimes against future generations, given the resources that we have and access to the scientific basis and knowledge we have today.
Thank you, Nishan. As you just mentioned, the important role of climate crisis regarding crimes against future generations. Gurney, what do you think? More and more young people are suing for climate crisis. How could the work of future justice and future generation help to achieve climate justice and the right to a healthy environment?
Thank you for asking this question, because I am from, to be honest, from Global South, and understanding climate justice in Global South and Global North is a bit different, because Global South kind of faces the brunt of climate crisis more in comparison to Global North till today. And to be honest, youths are involved in Global South with more local indigenous means of climate adaptation strategies, which are not really coming into forefront. And the impact of climate crisis, as it is more, they are more focusing onto climate migration coming up as a climate adaptation strategy, for example, and also local adaptation means because of the scarcity of resources. Whereas while I was researching on climate adaptation policies in the Global North, it is more for, you know, long-term measures with huge funding, infrastructural governmental projects coming up, and the issues are different. So the impact of climate crisis and youth voices also differs, which is very interesting to see in this regard. And I think youth as a local means, probably in the Global South, I'm from India. So while I was working in India, I have observed that locals, they are not themselves aware of what climate crisis actually means, but they know that, okay, this is the situation that they have to deal with in a year or so. So probably for that reason, they are not aware whether they are doing something as climate action policy or climate action justice, but this climate justice can be achieved by this local indigenous means. From the global south perspectives and from the global north perspectives, probably their ideas, how we can bridge the gap between the two perceptions and foster a more climate just plan.
Yes, I agree. And back in 2007, the World Future Council proposed an ombudsperson for future generations to achieve future justice on a political level, even with the authorities to design and review policies to safeguard their rights. Gourney, what is your opinion on the concept of ombudsperson? And should we perhaps take this even further and consider young people as such an ombudsperson?
For me, I think that it's impossible to think about, to think without young people as ombudspersons, because young people for me are stakeholders. Because they understand the solutions and they not only understand the problems, but they have the capacity to also innovate newer solutions to the newer changing problems that are emerging in the conflicting world. So as ombudspersons, young people can really resolve, has the capacity to resolve the problems that current generations or current world is experiencing. So for me, youth perceptions and youth voices should be a matter of consideration into the legal frameworks, into the policies, into the developmental agendas that are recently formulated in terms of academia, in terms of any nonprofit organizations, international corporations.
No, thank you, Gourney. I think, I couldn't agree with you more. And I really do think the proposal on an ombudsperson or a guardian or an envoy for future generation is absolutely critical to bring about a paradigm change, not only in the consciousness of how we make decisions that impact the wider, but also in practical terms. And this is what the World Future Council has not only been doing at the international level, but advocating at the national level and the regional level with very good examples. From the Welsh example of, a commissioner for future generations in Wales, to Ireland, to the Netherlands, to Hungary. There are so many examples that we can build on.
Well, thank you. This leads me to the UN Summit of the Future, a timely initiative that will be hosted by the UN General Assembly in September 2024 in New York City. The organizers are calling it a once-in-a-generation opportunity to strengthen global governance for the benefit of current and future generations. So I would like to ask both of you what such a summit can mean for the awareness of the rights of future generations, and what results are you hoping for?
I think the Summit of the Future has a lot more potential because it kind of bridges the gaps between the interactions and between the exchange of ideas from the so-called experts, legal experts, policy developmental persons, and also from the persons who are technically non-experts, but youth perceptions and voices who are actually the stakeholders of the future. And I think the summit is important because when we talk about the future, it needs to take into account of our actions in the present, how we are doing in the present to develop a better future. We never know what a future looks like, but this summit kind of would ring in a bridging gap of the justice perceptions, bridging the interaction gaps. So I think it is very important to have this summit and really making it into a success so that we can foster a very good all the sustainable developmental goals, fulfilling all the criterias and living a sustainable life, probably in future.
No, thank you, Gourney. I think, I couldn't agree with you more. I would just, supplement it by, two quick points, the importance of the Summit of the Future. I sincerely hope it's the Summit of the Future of peoples and not just a simple usual day-to-day, member states, UN-driven process, but the people of the United Nations, as is set out in the Charter of the United Nations, is brings in and brings in the perspective that the World Future Council has been pioneering and engaging and advocating since its inception, that the wider voices that you mentioned are, that do not get any kind of platform, has a necessary hearing. And it's not just to warm a chair at the table, but it is brought into the decision-making processes. And here I go to the second point I wanted to highlight of the opportunity of the Summit of the Future, is to really to build on the wisdom that we have. And the World Future Council, for example, you know, in the spirit I mentioned this, you know, three individuals, one late Professor Hans-Peter Duhr, possibly the foremost nuclear physicist of the last generation, who talked about the dangers of the nuclear weapon and the nuclear energy and the things the policymakers should be doing, the educators should be doing, and those funding sources that needs to necessarily strengthen these processes so that we can actually bring an informed decision-making. And the other being probably the legal judicial mind of the last century, late Judge Christopher Veeramanthi, the former vice president of International Court of Justice, who've had the great privilege of working with for a long time. He talked about that you do not need to invent international law. International law is already in place, whether it is about duties of current generations toward future generations, earth trusteeship, intergenerational equity. And he wrote this into judgment at the International Court of Justice over a quarter of a century ago when he was a judge of the ICJ. Now, these are the cases and precedents that when the advisory opinion of the climate issue is going to be taken by the World Court will necessarily go into. And I fully agree with Goni. It is not just Global North or Global South, but every level of decision making needs to participate in the Summit of the Future to make sure the voices are heard, represented, and meaningful decisions are taken.
Absolutely. It's crucial that we seize this opportunity to better protect our future and the future of our planet through international corporations. But nevertheless, such commitments made at international level often remain inconsequential. So how can we ensure that such commitments are effectively implemented at the local level so that real change takes place?
Goody, I'm always happy to follow you.
Okay, so the future generations and the future justice for me can be fostered first with the awareness. I think education comes first. That's the primary thing. Until and unless you know what you're doing, there is no way leading to a concrete developmental plan or formulation. So the youth, despite their locational barriers, despite their any caste, class, creed, any discrimination patterns where we maintain this otherization processes, we need to really forget about this otherization tendencies. And we need to bridge the gap of the interactions and their understandings of all the understanding of the youth. Maybe the perceptions can be a homogeneous perception, but from the heterogeneous youth group. And then education can also lead to certain actions and certain plans. First, we need to raise the awareness, and then maybe this mass awareness can really lead to a social change. And that's how develop a collective action and foster social change. Education comes first, and then maybe we can do all these research publications and formulate legal frameworks and developmental policies or governmental action plans. But until and unless we know what we are doing, it's it's a very distant dream to follow. And that's what I feel.
Yes, I agree. And Gorni, you supported the Global Future Forum in March and developed a forum statement with youth present, highlighting what you as young people expect and hope from the Summit of the Future. And you might want to tell us a bit more about one demand you actually had in your statement, to embed the SDGs as an obligatory topic into school curriculums, to ensure that students are informed about the global sustainability agenda and to empower them to take sustainable actions and you probably have an idea how that could be achieved.
Yes, I think it's very important to talk about sustainable developmental goals from the very beginning. And it is very important for children to know what sustainable developmental goals are, actually what United Nations framework actually deal with it. And it's not just a framework, it's the way of living. It's kind of read and then think and then act. So these three principles needs to be followed. First, they need to read, and that's how sustainable developmental goals need to be formulated into the school curriculums. My point here is how to develop our sustainable developmental goals into the school curriculum, because some school curriculum has already fostered the sustainable developmental goal plans. But what about the places in the world where they don't even know? They are probably actively participating into the sustainable developmental goal plans, but they really don't know what they are actually participating into. So for that reason, probably those who know might go to that places, volunteer themselves and teach those kids, those children to raise more awareness. Probably maybe mobile schools can be fostered, more green spaces can be fostered, even nature can be more explored to involve into a more fun activities, or maybe some workshops or some co-curricular activities can be offered to teach more about recent practices or recent innovative solutions of what sustainable developmental goals are actually looking forward to into the Global South spaces.
Yeah, I think, Marie, I couldn't, disagree. I fully endorse what Guni was saying. I think education is key. And I think there needs to be a concerted effort of making sure that the awareness reaches the right decision-making bodies, and the work that the World Future Council does on future just policymaking, both in its normative framework, the seven principles, which obviously has its roots in indigenous cultures and legal systems, but also how some of these just policies has had an impact and has involved communities at the local level when decision-making is being done. And I think it needs those two-pronged approach of education, but also examples that has been successful, and having a solutions-based approach is absolutely key, because everyone talks about the crisis, but we need to approach this from the solutions. And we have, over the last decade and a half, so many policies, but it needs to be assessed and analyzed on how it has had impact, and bring that to the decision-making bodies at the world stage, but the region, as well as the national and local levels. But almost at that, it is perhaps one of the failings of the current governance systems that we really not heeded to the wisdom of the indigenous community. We had the wonderful elder, and I've been privileged to speak at length, Pauline Tangiora, who's one of wonderful Maori elder from Otoraya, New Zealand. And she would always say, with the biggest legal terms, when we were talking about international law, she would say, try to find a way to listen to the smallest creatures, the frogs and the critters. If you are able to listen to the sound, and if you hear their sound, maybe Mother Earth is still happy. But if you cannot hear them, that means something is wrong, which means Mother Earth is sick. And if you are unable to hear them, that means you have shut yourselves into the industrial age, which overtook us as humans in the last 300 years. And we too need to re-evolve or go back in time, but also bring the developments and the evolutions we've had today, so that the decision makers that come through the educational system will actually bring about that sustainable decision making, conscious of our duties towards each other, the environment, and the common future that we have on this only planet, home Earth.
Thank you, Nishan, for this inspiring input. This reminds me of the seventh generation principle that takes into account the well-being of seventh generations after us, which are about 150 years. Well, thank you. Both of you made very clear what a great opportunity the Summit of the Future is to call on decision makers to prioritize youth engagement. But to what extent are young people currently involved, and what would need to happen to improve this?
I think youths are more actively engaged into the sustainable developmental goals right now, because they are really the change makers of the current society that we are going through. All the sustainable developmental goals, goal plans has youth heads. Like, I was personally the head of the No Poverty Group one time when United Nations was celebrating 75 years. And it's good that United Nations framework supports the youth voices and youth perceptions, and they are really making youths, because they are having the capacity to innovate newer solutions to newer problems. And that's how the future justice could be achieved. And that's how we could develop and really foster a sustainable future. To some extent, youths are more aware of the programs that United Nations framework currently is in practice. And to some extent, those who are not aware of it, probably they can get more awareness. And that's where we need to really work on. And that's how future justice could be really visualized in probably next 50 years. And that's how our goal is of the future summit, to discuss where we are going wrong or what needs to be done more, with more actively engaging between different perceptions, from different corners of the world. And I feel it's absolutely a necessity and very, very like quintessential to deal with it.
Thank you, Gurneet.
Nishan, in addition to your involvement in the Summit of the Future, you are the co-chair of the Earth Trusteeship Initiative, which focuses on responsibilities and rights concerning humans and Mother Earth. It is recognized by international law and informed by the wisdom of indigenous, cultural, and religious systems, and builds on the spirit of the Earth Charter 2000. In 2018, the Hague Declaration on Responsibilities for Human Rights and Earth Trusteeship was adopted. And this April, the first book discussing an interdisciplinary approach to achieving Earth Trusteeship was published. Nishan, how does this initiative contribute to future and intergenerational justice?
Thank you very much, Marie. Yes, I mean, I have the great honor of co-chairing a wonderful group of individuals who have counselors from the World Future Council, laureates from the Right Livelihood Award, and leaders in their own right in the academic disciplines in international law and social movements and young people. The idea of a trusteeship, as you said, you know, it gets its strength from international legal principles, but also the strength that the international legal principles is coined is through the indigenous wisdom. I think that needs to be highlighted in the first place. I mean, here I'll give one example of the two English words. Earth trusteeship is understood as stewardship, as guardianship, and so many other English words. But if you take the Maori culture from Otaria, New Zealand, they have many words, but one spirit word, what you call the spirit of Kaiti Akitanga. Now, Kaiti Akitanga talks about how we as humans are guardians of all the resources, but all the other natural resources are also our guardian. So that's the essence of it is. So how that connects to future justice in its sense, the legal principles on one side, such as a trusteeship, but also intergenerational equity, which is also a recognized principle, which is applicable in all levels of governance. And it is this principle which I think needs to influence, just to add to what Gurneet was saying, awareness. Where does the awareness come? Where does that consciousness come? And I think this is the conscious shift we need. And I think Earth trusteeship, stewardship, supported by the wisdom of indigenous systems, is what would realize or bring about this change. And I would say to the awareness, Gurneet, and I'm happy to hear your thoughts on this. Like, what do you kind of understand by the term Earth trusteeship? And what do you think about experiential learning for awareness creation?
At first, thank you, Nishan, for highlighting this, and because I work in Sundarbans. And there, people have really experienced this earth trusteeship, because the people of Sundarbans actually experience the sense of belonging with nature, because they are completely dependent on their livelihood strategies, are completely dependent on the forest-based resources, because there is no alternative means of job opportunities are available. And whatever is available, I completely second with you in this sense that they are not aware of what alternative solutions can be and what actions can lead harm to the environment, which they respect, because they respect forest as deities and mother nature and all this. But they are currently involved into all these developmental projects, like all the neoliberal developmental projects that are going on, because they need money, they need finances for that. And they are completely unaware that they are digging the holes in their own feet, because climate crisis and sea level rise and all this salinity intrusion, for example, these are all kind of more increasingly affecting their lives, in their day-to-day lives, that these are affected. Not only the tiger attacks is a problem, but also this is also another problem. And what are the climate adaptation strategies for that? Probably they are developing, one indigenous-based climate adaptation strategy. Or otherwise, they are just leaving the place. But then there comes the question that where is your sense of belonging? Because you are not actively or enrichingly participating into that, into your own environment, which you are respecting. And they are after migrating, they are kind of facing the same mental dilemma that, I have left my place, my sense of belonging, my mother nature. This is a very practical problem which we need to really think about, that how the sense of belonging works with mother nature and how it can be fostered, not only through implementing some solutions from the perspective from above, but also thinking from the perspective from the below. People staying there might have more alternative solutions to it. And I think we need to work on before it's too late.
No, thank you very much. Yes,
thank you.
Thank you for raising these points. Well, as we come to the end of our podcast today, let's try the old elevator pitch exercise here, because it's actually really good to reduce concepts to understandable bites. So if you had 2 sentences that you could use to explain the true essence of future justice to someone who knows nothing about it, what would you say? Gurney, would you like to go first?
Well, for me, I think someone who knows nothing about future justice, it is first most important, because I work with real marginalized communities, like tribal communities, for example, and they are not really interested to even listen to you and listen until you give them food or you give them resources to some extent at first, because their primary needs has to be satisfied in order to listen to, because they are that poor and they don't have that understanding of awareness. So for me, it is like how to develop a policy by taking into their perspective is itself a challenge. So for me, first is to bridge the gap between the inaccessibility of resources, because I think that is the fundamental problem.
Thank you. I know it's very difficult to put it to 2 sentences. Nisha.
No, I think very interesting. I think for me, in 2 sentences, it would be that we realize that we are all Earth trustees, that we have a duty to each other, which is equal to the duty that we have towards the environment and to future generations to reach their full potential. And we should be conscious of this in exercising our well-being on the planet. And I think realizing that it is limited time that we spend on the planet, and we are Earth trustees for that duration.
Thank you so much, Gurney and Nishan, for your thoughts and insights. It was a great conversation with you, and thanks for taking the time.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you, Marie, and thank you, everybody at the World Future Council.
Thank you for organizing this brilliant session, and thank you, Nishan. It was really great to listen to your insightful thoughts. Thank you, and thank you to World Future Council again.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. We hope you enjoyed this inspiring conversation and will tune in again for more next time. This podcast is brought to you by the World Future Council, a foundation that identifies, develops, highlights and disseminates future just solutions for the current challenges that humanity is facing. To support our work, find us at www.worldfuturecouncil.org, as well as on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook and, of course, in our next episode.